Well, hello there. Welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast a little later this week, given that we'd matches on Monday night. James O'Toole is here, so too Paul Curry. So lots and lots of things to chat about. We'll be joined by Dominic McGuinness to discuss the two Manchester outfits in the two big European finals this weekend. Here at home, Shamrock Rovers hit turbulence. Sligo Rovers now top. The Hoops' 33-game unbeaten run came to an end at Dundalk on Friday. And James, over stateside, I don't know, did you watch The Sopranos back in the day?
Yes, I did watch The Sopranos. I think everybody watched The Sopranos, did they not? Mm. I think Paul might be a bit too young for it.
No, I didn't. But did you, Paul?
No, I was a touch too young.
Look, it's still available on Netflix. I swear, it's from the 1960s. I'm too young. You've heard of it,
though. Time is of the essence. I have indeed. Yeah. I gave it a go. I gave it a go once upon a time, but I never fully got into it.
Yeah, so did I. So did I. I watched the first episode and I don't know. I might revisit it. Anyway, James, there's a reason why I'm mentioning The Sopranos. Vito, clearly, is a Dundalk supporter. And after the win over Shamrock Rovers on Friday night, he sent out this message. We obviously had to bleep it. We had to get the bleep machine out to bleep it fairly heavily. Here's what he had to say.
Guess who it is? I'm back, Joey G. Vito from The Sopranos. So Dundalk, I guess my little pep talk worked, huh? We beat the Shams like a golf club beat my brother Brian. So let's build on this and let's take the title back from those Talabutanes. So listen, I watched it on Watched LOI and I'm going to be watching again. Come on, the town. I'll be watching. Don't let me down. Take it easy.
And they did, James. They let him down. Hot on the heels of that win. Daily Mount last night. He's been very quiet. I'm worried. I'd be worried for everybody involved with Dundalk today.
Yeah, I haven't seen any video from him yet this morning. I can't wait to see. Georgie Kelly might be in for a baseball bat or two, I'd say. Or maybe the funds run out for his little chats. But there you go. I would like to hear his voice this morning.
Okay. Well, listen, we'll round up all the action from the SSE Electricity League very shortly. But, Paul, the Irish squad named by Stephen Kenny for the end-of-season games against Andorra and Hungary, what do you make of it? It includes Jamie McGrath. We chatted about Jamie McGrath on the podcast last week, absolutely flying it at St Mirren at the back end of the season. Danny Mandrew of Shamrock Rovers also in there. Former Limerick and Cork City player Chidozie Ogbene. Andrew Omabamadile, but I guess Danny Mandrew getting the call up is pretty significant, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely huge for Danny Mandrew, and to be fair to him, he's been a solid performer for Shamrock Rovers since he's gone in there, and he's shown us the form that I guess brought him to everybody's radar when he was at Bohemians. But I probably didn't suspect that he would be in the squad so soon. You know, when you think back to the likes of Jack Byrne getting in the squad and what he had to do with performances in Europe and doing it consistently for, I would say, the guts of 3-4 months, being the league's top performer, that's what he had to do to warrant a place in the Ireland squad. And maybe this has come a little quicker for Danny Mandrew, just given the lack of strength and depth that we have in the squad at the moment. And it's also a difficult time for players, Adrian, at the end of a season and then having to get called up to international duty. Sometimes players just want to get their legs up. So it probably presents an opportunity for a few. And for Danny Mandrew, it's an unbelievable opportunity to go in there and lay a stake for future squads.
Yeah. James, what about Chris Forrester? You know, if you're looking at League of Ireland players, can he feel perhaps a little hard done by?
I don't know if he can. I think it's all, like, if you look at what Stephen's picked here, it's a good thing for several members of the squad, because it seems to be if you're on form, you're going to be in the squad, where it doesn't seem to be a hangover for you were one of my men, so you're in the squad. I think Chris has had a really, really good season so far, but I think Mandroy has just basically stood out a little bit more. I'm over the moon for McGrath, I have to say. It's great to see him in there. He's won so many awards at St Mirren this year, and it's good to see him there. But it does show that Stephen's really, really looking at betting some new people in and people who are in form at the moment.
Okay, then let's round up the events of the weekend, starting with the big game on Friday night. Dundalk, of course, bringing to an end Shamrock Rovers' unbeaten record, as mentioned. 33 games it lasted. 2-1 winners, Dundalk. Patrick McElhenney gave Dundalk the lead, cancelled out by Joey O'Brien. Danielle Kelly got the winning goal for the Lily Whites. Elsewhere, Pats 2, Bohemians 1, Robbie Benson scoring an injury time penalty. Waterford 0, Derry City 1, Ronan Boyce after just 4 minutes. And at Finn Park, it finished Finn Harps 0, Drogheda United 1. Dane Massey deep in stoppage time with a smashing free kick to give Drogheda all 3 points. And at the Showgrounds, it ended Sligo Rovers 2, Longford Town 0, Walter Figuera and Jordan Gibson. Gibson scoring from the penalty spot. On then to Monday and at Tallaght Stadium, in the meeting of the two Rovers, Sligo Rovers recorded their first win in Tallaght since 2013 to move to the top of the table. A first home defeat for the Hoops since June 2019. Romeo Parks with a calm finish early in the second half, so Shamrock Rovers lose back-to-back games. Stephen Bradley on the way, but first the Sligo Rovers manager, Liam Buckley.
It's great. Delighted for all our supporters up in Sligo as well, and you know, all the committee members that go to all the funding of our football club and all that, and our group. That we have worked extremely hard tonight. Maybe we've marginally been the better, although we've thrown up a couple of chances in the second half there, but overall I'm chuffed.
We're okay. Like they were, I thought they were okay. Did we do enough to win the game? No, I didn't think they did either. We gave them a really poor goal, but overall we're just okay.
Word on Danny Mandrew, called into the Republic of Ireland squad. That's obviously a huge boost for him personally and for the club as well, I'd say.
Yeah, delighted for him. He's been excellent since he's come in. He's worked extremely hard. He's obviously very talented, and the last two games he's had to play a different position, and he's played it quite well, and He just has a great attitude and wants to keep learning and improving. So yeah. I'm delighted for him.
That's Stephen Bradley. Now at the Ryan McBride Brandywell, Billy King scored late to earn St. Pat's a 2-2 draw with Derry City. A great goal from Joe Thompson had given Derry City a 2-1 lead. Alan Matthews from St. Pat's on the way. But first, the thoughts of the Derry manager, Rory Higgins, speaking to Cathal Mullany.
I thought it was an entertaining game. Chances of both fans and two teams really committed and had a go at each other. And for me, a point was probably a fair result.
Is it a game you should have won, given you were in front in the closing stages?
It is, and well, you would, when you get to the 85th minute, 2-1 in front, you would like to close it out, but we probably should have defended it better, but then we've gone up the other end and created another chance and could have nicked it in the end. But listen, they're a really, really good team. We knew that we would have to be at our very best to win the game, and we've gone close.
We're happy to have got an equaliser, to be honest with you. Tyler performance, we probably shaded it, but overall, when you're a goal down with a couple of minutes remaining and you get an equaliser, you'd be happy enough to take a point.
That's Alan Matthews from St. Pat's at Derrymount Park. What a result. Bohemians 5, Dundalk 1. A hat-trick for Georgie Kelly against his old club. His first Premier Division hat-trick. He spoke after the game to Damien O'Mara.
There's a little bit of luck involved. My performances, I've been playing all right, I think, over the last few weeks, and I haven't been getting, balls haven't been dropping for me, and I haven't, keepers been pulling a few saves. So I think it's just important not to get too frustrated, because then they do come, like, you do get chances and you do get that little bit of luck. So yeah, I'm delighted to get a couple tonight, yeah.
It's nice. It's the challenge of being that lone man up front, just the way Bo's play. You know, you can be a hero if it falls the right way. You can end up doing an awful lot of work if it's the nights that go against you. So it's not always the glamorous role.
No, that's the name of the game. That's the way it is. Yeah, you have to battle and fight. But yeah, hopefully then when nights like these come around, it makes it worth it, yeah.
That's Georgie Kelly. Well, let's get the perspective from Dundalk. Here's their sporting director, Jim McGilton, really unhappy with what unfolded at Derrymount when he spoke to Damien O'Mara.
We were second best all over the pitch. Probably, in hindsight, my fault. You know, I gave, you know, the 11 that did so well that started the game the other night another chance, and we were leggy. We were just second best and all over the pitch right from the first whistle. Although, you know, we did start quite brightly, we were just the basics of the game, which we were so good at the other night, we were so bad at today. What is more disappointing is, you know, the attitude and the application shown by Bohemians, who had the same turnovers as ourselves, and we just couldn't go again. We just didn't have enough in our locker, given the experience and the quality that we have in our team. You know, to be beaten in just sheer endeavour is really disappointing.
Is that psychological as much as anything else?
Yes, it is. It of course it is. You know, the mind, the brain can tell you all sorts, and it can make, you know, cards of us all. And it was just really, you know, an aspect of the game that I did not expect. You know, given what they showed on Friday to where we are today, was, you know, hugely disappointing. Hugely disappointing for us as staff, you know, because we didn't expect it. We didn't really see it coming. And to walk away from this getting beat, really spanked, was hugely disappointing. But, you know, the thing is, we got to go again. You know, we've another game now on Friday, and we got to present ourselves. And you know, people have to remember, players have to remember, it's not only you know themselves that they have to think about. It's fans. Fans will be bitterly disappointed after this.
This is a repeated thing that you've been forced to talk about week in, week out. And you know, just give me the insight from a management point of view. How much can you do? Is it deeply frustrating for you? You try and prepare the players, you try and get the players in the right headspace, but you can't play the game for them. So you've experienced characters in that dressing room. Yeah. You have leaders. Is it a case of trying to get them to focus, to buy in, to understand what's at stake, or is it a combination of all of that?
It's a combination of all of that, but you'd be doing them an injustice to think that they can't do that. You know, these guys, some of these guys have been in very, very successful teams at this football club, so they know what it takes to win a game of football. At the end of the day, you know, once a player crosses the white line, I don't think I've ever crossed the white line and thought about a manager. Do you know what I mean? I've thought about my own personal performance and then the team's performance. So at some stage, the penny has to drop for these guys. They have to acknowledge that that is not acceptable. You can't go from a level where you're very good to very, very poor. And maybe that's the mindset of the player we have at the minute.
That's Jim McGilton. Elsewhere, Drogheda United 4, Longford Town 1. Jordan Adeyemo scored 2 late goals to put the gloss on a 4-1 win for Drogheda. Longford boss Darragh Doyle on the way. But first, here's Drogheda's Tim Clancy.
Yeah, I think the scoreline will probably be a bit misguiding in the way the game actually went. First half, we were really happy going into half-time. We knew that if we could have got the third goal in the game, it probably would have killed it. And we didn't want to give long for that. And listen, we sort of could have defended the goal better. And I think it was 7 minutes into the second half, they got the goal. And then, listen, we just defended for, I'd say, another 35 minutes or so. And then the two finishes Jordan has just come up with. Frightening finishes, and the kid's capable of that. He's the best finisher I have at the club, and the best one I've worked with in the last 4 years here at Drogheda. He's just natural, playing the shoulder, and he'll finish. And he's only a young lad, and if he can add the other parts to his game, he's going to be a real asset to us.
Darragh, I suppose from a Longford point of view, it was a game of two halves. You looked in difficulty, 2-0 down at half time. Damage could have been greater, but massive reaction in the second half. What's your overall feeling at the end of a 4-1 scoreline?
Yeah, listen, it was a game of two halves. In the first half, we'd be disappointed to go in 2-0 down. It probably causes a lot of problems down there left side. Probably get a soft free kick, I think, here. The Lions wins for the free kick, and then Doyle scores late on. But no, you've got to give credit to Drogheda. They performed very well in the first half and went in with a deserved 2-0 lead. We weren't happy with a lot of the things that were happening, and we knew we needed to perform better. We knew we needed a reaction from the players, and we needed to get back out there and show that very quickly. In the second half, we felt that we did that. We put the game to them, brought on a lot of attacking players, and you know, it was looking like once we got the one goal back that there was a chance for us to get something from this game. So we brought on some attacking players to try and go for it at that stage. And sometimes when you bring some players on when an attacking, and you leave yourselves a little bit exposed and open on the back, and we've been caught with two sucker punches late on which don't really reflect the 4-1 scoreline, puts a gloss on the game when we're really going for it in the last couple of minutes when there's goals near the 90th minute and the 94th minute, as it was.
That's the Longford manager, Darragh Doyle. Well, Adam Foley came off the bench to net the winner for Finn Harps as they came from behind to beat Waterford 2-1 in Mark Bertram's second match in charge of Waterford. We'll hear his thoughts shortly. But first, the Finn Harps assistant manager, Paul Hegarty.
I thought we were very good in the first half. I thought we had plenty of chances. Now, we gave away a poor goal early doors now, but I thought in the first half we were very good. Like, we had enough of chances, you know, to be going in front at half-time, never mind behind, but look, to be fair to the players and that, and we spoke about it at half-time, you've got to be patient. And they got their just rewards then.
The game plan was, as you said, do it opposite. Let's start high tempo from the start, pressing them and try and get something and hold on to it. Because, as we said, with our lads not training, there's no way they could do it for 90 minutes. And what's hard is that we've got young kids on the bench, and you see that they're the land of giants, and they was going to work on long throw set pieces. I really feel for them because it's so hard, and I don't want to make excuses, but what's gone on with the lads and with the COVID has been so hard. Like, we've got lads that have had COVID that are getting texts from their HSC that they can come out and train with us, and then they're telling us no, they can't, and now they've come out, they wanted to now COVID test the whole team. We've got lads that have never tested positive that have got an extra 17 days quarantine on top of, and they've never tested positive. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. We just, even up until today's game, it was close to the whole team getting COVID tested again. And I, there's only two people that's got it, and the two people that's got it has had texts saying they can come out, they've done their quarantine. So I feel, I'm trying to be as upbeat as possible, but I feel for the group of players in there because we are bare bones, we've hardly trained. I always said from the start, 2 games in 4 days is hard for a fit team, and with a squad of players. You look at theirs, their subs come on and scored, and you look at us, we wanted to change it. We're looking around, we can't change it.
There you go. That's a clearly frustrated Waterford manager, Mark Burcham. Paul, we should start at Talla Stadium because it was the meeting of the top two. Sligo Rovers emerging victorious, as I mentioned there a few moments ago, their first win in Talla since 2013. Issues, of course, for Shamrock Rovers. Lots of injuries at the moment, but back-to-back defeats. Who'd have thought that?
Yeah, it certainly wasn't really on the base of form. You probably weren't looking at Shamrock Rovers and seeing them dropping so many points over the last couple of weeks. But I guess when you take it back, they scored a lot of late goals in games against Drogheda and St. Pat's to rescue points. And maybe that was papering over some of the cracks. And maybe the performances haven't been quite of the level of last year. And of course, with the number of injuries that Stephen Bradley has, you can probably let some of those performances slide. Because when you take a Ronan Finn, a Sean Hoare, Sean Kavanagh out of any side, well, teams are of course going to struggle. But I just thought, looking at the performance last night, looking at the performance against Dundalk, they don't really seem to be playing in the same sort of fluid style that they were last year. And I know they've lost Jack and they've lost Aaron McInniff, but I think for me, when you play Gaffney and you play Green up top together, I think there's more of a tendency to be a bit more direct, to play into them and play off them, and also to play maybe in behind back fours and turn opposition. And when you think back to last season, they dominated possession and they took the legs away from teams and they won so many games doing that way. And that for me would just be a slight worry, because I think when you play in that style, you probably give oppositions more of a chance to get a foothold in the game because you're giving them more of the ball. But that would be a slight worry for me at Shamrock Rovers. But then with Sligo and the job Liam Buckley has done there, I thought they were ever so impressive. I think they're a really solid unit. Greg Bulger and Gibson going in there have been excellent. And I think when you've got Gary Buckley playing as well as he has done, and McGinty in goal, I think they look a really solid unit.
Yeah, I'll come on to Sligo Rovers in just a few moments. But James, just on Shamrock Rovers, a few weeks back when they beat St. Pat's at Richmond Park, I really thought at that stage, I thought, wow, this team is going to just kick on and waltz to the league title. But they faltered big style after such a tremendous run, setting the record, 33 matches unbeaten. You thought, well, they're going to cruise to the title, but they've really hit choppy waters now, haven't they?
They have, and as Paul's already mentioned, I think they got 7 of their first 11 now injured or suspended, especially for last night. It's a difficult game. I think, to tell you the truth, I thought they played really well against Dundalk and were hit on the counter for the first goal, and similar again for the second. And it's just those little breaks that they were getting last season, they're not getting now. And it's understandable because, as I said, like, they're missing so many of their first team that they're going to go through this. And in fairness, the two teams they come up against are Dundalk and Sligo. Dundalk, okay, you can say that's a bit of a blip because they're not the way they were last year or any year before this. And Sligo just playing really, really well. And it was a tight game yesterday, and just that with Romeo Parks, just his calmness when he gets into the box and just slots the ball past Manus in the net. They deserved it, but it's something that Stephen Bradley would definitely get back on the training ground, I'd say, tomorrow morning and start working at it again.
Yeah, so Sligo Rovers, as we mentioned, top of the table, Paul. And you mentioned it there. You were impressed by the overall shape and style and approach of Buckley's side.
Yeah, it probably shouldn't come as a surprise because he's done it so many times, and they're starting to resemble that Pats team that he had that won the league. And there's a real freedom and a real belief amongst the team that they have the players that can go out there and get results. And I've seen a number of people allude to the fact that they've got a really nice blend of promising youngsters coming through, and then a really solid foundation with the likes of your Bulgers and your Buckleys who have been there and done that. My main concern was probably early on in the season, would they score enough goals, and would Parks and Figueroa and that be able to contribute? And to be fair to them, over the last number of weeks, they have. And by no means did they look phased going to Talla last night. They kept the ball really well. They work oppositions and they create chances. And Liam has done that consistently over his time with whatever club he's been at. And Sligo look a real force. Now, chasing can sometimes be easier than leading from the front. So now that they're up there, let's see how they get on. But that mid-season break is probably not coming at the right time for Sligo.
Yeah, big game again on Friday night against Finn Harps. It's the club's away form, James, that is so striking. They played 6 games away from home. They've taken 16 out of 18. The only setback was the draw in Drogheda. So on the road, they've been rock solid, which is pretty impressive, isn't it?
It is. It's you always say that your home form is where you basically build your foundations for any kind of league title challenge. But Sligo's away form has been absolutely excellent. And again, Paul's talking about the guys you have in there know the league. And then you've got a couple of guys like early in the season, Johnny Kenny was the person that we were all talking about. But Liam's even managed that situation well, where he's taking him out for a couple of games and putting him in as sub now. So it's between himself and Romeo, and he's learning from Romeo. And then you've got the guy like Gary Buckley at the back, turning into one of the best centre-halves we've seen in the league. And it's true guys like that that get you that away form. And any points on the road are bonus points. And they're absolutely flying at the moment.
Yeah, Rolls-Royce of a performance from Gary Buckley defensively for Sligo Rovers last night. Paul, the elephant in the room, Dundalk. We mentioned the Sopranos and, you know, the joy of beating Beshams, as Vito called them, Beshams, on Friday night. And then capitulation against Bowes at Dalyman Park on a May Monday. It's a bizarre situation, isn't it? And you'd feel for the supporters who've enjoyed so much success over the last few years. But a 5-1 thumping, that's a dreadful result. That goes without saying, really.
Yeah, like, where do you begin, Adrian? Like, I probably thought when Magilton went in a couple of weeks ago in that temporary role that you might start to see a turnaround. And, you know, I probably still fancied that if they put a run together, they were probably the team that were going to challenge Shamrock Rovers. But it just isn't. It's not there. Like, it was a really good performance against Shamrock Rovers. Of course, they rode their luck, but they managed to secure 3 points. And off the back of that, you're thinking, okay, confidence within the squad. Get another 2 victories before the break and see can they get going. But it's not there at the moment. And Magilton has come out and you know, he's speaking about clear outs on the cards at the end of the season. It's really hard one to put your finger on. And, you know, we could sit here and talk about Shane Keegan, who was there, Giagnoli or Jim Magilton, but it rests with the players, and the players just haven't been good enough. And it's a bit of a sad story, because they've produced for so long and they've produced such a high standard, and it's just not in the legs anymore. And it doesn't seem like it's gonna turn anytime soon. You could write this season off because they're so far away from the top teams. And when you write this season off, well, then where do you go? Do you start to clear out the players who have done so much for the club and try start fresh? The recruitment hasn't exactly set the world on fire either. So it's a sticky one. You could imagine if the fans were allowed into the grounds, what sort of scenes we'd be seeing. But in the short term, it's hard to see it changing, because the performances just aren't there on a weekly basis from some of the league's top players.
Yeah, strange days at Oriel Park these days, James, isn't it? Because you look at the players that are there and you think, wow, you know, they look like, you know, a bunch of players that are well equipped. But I was flicking between the two matches, between Dalymount and the Brandywell yesterday evening, as I'm sure you were, because that's part of your gig these days, keeping an eye and editing all the various clips together. But they were so passive in midfield. I know they had Chris Shields in the centre of defence, but in midfield they were pretty much non-existent.
Yeah, absolute non-existent. It was quite bizarre to see them, actually, the way they played, because you look at how well they played against Rovers on Friday night, and then just a complete turnaround from that. They were lethargic. They didn't seem to be creating anything. I think they created one shot on target in the first half by McMillan, which was a near post effort. And that was about it. But take nothing away from Bowes. Bowes got at them early and just kept going. And just kept at it and kept at it and kept at it. And there's nothing worse than coming up against a striker who you've let go because you don't think he's good enough for your team. And then he pops up and scores a hat-trick against you. It's some of the worst, as we're talking about squad rotation and stuff like that at Dundalk. But I think Georgie was one of those you could have actually kept at Dundalk, and he would have progressed even more. But he certainly found his feet now at Bowes. And Dundalk are going really, really, really backwards. It's shocking to see how far they've fallen.
Yeah, their heaviest league defeat since September 2012, a 7-0 away loss at Shamrock Rovers for Dundalk. But that's to take nothing away, as James mentioned there, Paul, from Bohemians. Georgie Kelly getting a hat-trick. He has his critics, but it was great for him on a personal level to bag a hat-trick, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And he missed a couple in Richmond Park on Friday, and no better way of kind of answering those critics than popping up against Dundalk and banging in a hat-trick. And I thought he bullied the centre-halves yesterday, held the ball up really well. And that's probably the strongest part of his game, is holding the ball up and bringing others into the game. But his finishing was really composed yesterday, and he certainly deserved that hat-trick. And for Bowes to take things forward, they really need Georgie firing on all cylinders, because, you know, when you think back to last year and how well they did with Twardek, Grant and Rice, it takes time for a front three to gel. And, you know, the performances have somewhat been there over the last number of weeks. And if they can combine that with results, well, then you could maybe see them picking up a bit of form and moving up the table. But if they are to do that, Georgie, if he can reproduce that sort of form on a weekly basis, will certainly help. But they've been good, Adrian. Like, they were actually good in Richmond on Friday as well, and they were excellent last night. And sometimes it's a case of just actually putting the points on the board to warrant your results. And I think Keith will have a hidden confidence about his team heading into kind of the second half of the season.
Yeah, James, I was very surprised that Cameron Dumigan was left on Liam Burt for so long. And he obviously picked up a second yellow card as well. Bowes had lost Tyrek Wilson by that stage to a red card. But I was surprised that Jim McGilton hadn't maybe switched it up, maybe brought on Dara Leahy and switched Yurkovskis over to the right-hand side. Is that just me?
No, he was being absolutely murdered by him, to tell you the truth, from about 10 minutes in when he got his first yellow card. It did seem a bit strange. I actually think that Leahy is a much better left full anyway. I'm a bit shocked as to why Leahy isn't in the squad. I don't know what they're seeing in training or anything like that. But Leahy, when he went into that squad last season, was absolutely wonderful. Took his time to get in, obviously, because he had Dane Massey. When Dane gets injured, he just basically comes in and he was excellent. So that was a bit of a surprise, and it was no surprise to see him get a second yellow, it must be said. But Bert, the only way to destroy it, I think it's Georgie's second goal, is it, where Bert takes the ball, first touch, second touch, takes it down from the air, and then third touch plays him in. Just having defenders turning around, and as Paul said there about Georgie and his physicality, when he scores his headed goal, he's off running while two defenders who've tried to challenge him are picking themselves up off the ground. So that'll show you how physical he was. But overall, a really, really good performance by Bohemians, and one, I think, Ollie Horgan mentioned a couple of weeks ago that they're going to thump a couple of sides, and that's two in the bag now, because they thumped Harps and then they've thumped Dundalk.
Derry City 2, St Pat's 2, James, you happy enough with that?
Yeah, you'd have to be happy for that from a Derry point of view. Okay, you're letting a goal in late, but you'd be happy enough with that. It must be said, St Pat's are on a really good run, challenging the top of the league, whereas Derry are at the opposite end, trying to gain some momentum to push themselves up the table. So yeah, you'd be very, very happy with that. The only thing you'd be worried about is that defenders are the only people who seem to be scoring for Derry at the moment. Another one yesterday for Boyce. I know Thompson scores one, but Boyce is Derry's top goal scorer now at the minute with four goals, so that's where you'd be worried.
Yeah, some strike, mind you, from Joe Thompson, wasn't it, to give them the lead. What a goal.
Yeah, I'm sure Paul has seen a couple come out to him like that in the middle of the park, and it's one of those things where you either hit it well or you don't hit it well. And thankfully for Thompson, he kept it down, got over the ball, knee over the ball, and it was an absolute cracking strike. Really, really good. The last time I think I seen a strike like that was Kevin Deary in Fir Park, I think. That's how good it was.
Well, that's interesting. Some of my games are still waiting to land.
Yeah, I was just going to say, tell us about that goal you scored.
Oh.
I don't seem to recall that 30-yard blaster. Did you?
I tell you what, it certainly wasn't up in Brandywell anyway.
Seriously,
I think
though.
It's called in UCD.
Yeah, did you get a few of those kind of long-range drives? Don't be modest now. We need to know these things.
I got one, which is a really timely one, out in Talca Park. And we beat Shells 2-1. And it was as my stock was kind of on the rise, and there was a few teams sniffing around. And I got a really nice one into the top corner, kind of came across my body and guided it in. So it very much helped my move. But I didn't get too many. And I think more landed in car parks than they did in the back of the net.
And did you celebrate it madly, or were you just, yeah, no, I'm a true pro, I'll just stroll away nonchalantly. I do this every week kind of vibe, in case the scouts were thinking.
I'd love to say I did. I'd love to say I celebrated like this was something that normally happened. I think I was more surprised than anybody else on the ground.
Hey, Drogheda United, what a season so far, Paul. 4-1 winners over Longford Town. Now, I know the scoreline, by all accounts, flatters Drogheda United. But the last few days, indeed the last few weeks, Drogheda United have been absolutely superb. Are you impressed by the job that Tim Clancy and Kevin Doherty are doing there?
I can't get over it, Adrian. And I think when I spoke with it at the start of the season, I probably would have said themselves and Longford would be two of the teams that might struggle. But that's 4 wins in a row. And I just can't get over the form that they've shown, and actually the organisation about the squad, and actually then the quality that they've shown when they've got their foot in the ball. And the recruitment has been really good. They've brought in good characters in the likes of your Deegans, Massey's, and Ronan Murray's, and then they've also got the core group from last year who have really stepped up to the Premier Division this season. So it's an incredible job that Tim has done there. You can almost say now at this point in the season that they're not going to be in trouble of going down. So it's about how high can they finish up the table. And the job that Tim has done there is nothing short of extraordinary. And when you think of the teams, in particular Dundalk, and the vacancies going around, Tim Clancy is most certainly going to be top of a lot of those lists. And for Drogheda to continue that form, they really just need to keep a hold of them.
Yeah, it is going to be a challenge because, you know, as Paul says there, James, Tim Clancy's reputation is being enhanced week on week, isn't it?
It has indeed. And the way they played yesterday, they were very, very good in the first half. And of course, when they win 2-0, you know that Longford are going to throw absolutely everything at the second half. They get an early goal back, but they weathered the storm. And that's something they may not have done last year. Like, once they get that early goal back, they may not have weathered that storm. And that just shows you how much he's brought to them and much character he's brought to them. And they ran out realistically easy winners at the end. And I tell you, as Paul has mentioned, like, Darragh Markey's another person he's brought in. And we may not see him as someone who we think is an old head in this, but for the couple of seasons he was at St. Pat's, and the way he lays on, I think it's the third goal last night. If you haven't seen it, you've got to go and see it. It's absolutely wonderful piece of skill. It's great.
Yeah, two fine goals for Jordan Adeyemo in that game. It's tough, isn't it, Paul, for Longford Town at the moment? I mean, they're game, they're honest, they're well organised, but they're finding the going tough.
Yeah, they are, and it's not an easy job, and even particularly with Tim at Drogheda, you know, you have to be lean, and you have to be, I guess lean is the word, with your budgets, because you're not competing on the same sort of level playing field as other squads. But, you know, it's a difficult one. They'll produce certain results, and I'm sure they've got performances in them where they can maybe take points off teams, but in the majority of games, you're probably backs against the wall and hanging in there quite a bit. But that said, Waterford have really, you know, not got going this season. So they have a lifeline there, and you would imagine that it's going to be a straight fight out between the two and who can kind of graft out and pick up points along the way. But it's a difficult one for Longford. Like, the resources just aren't there to compete with a lot of the other teams in the season. So it'll be important, I would say, over the next couple of weeks that you just pick up a point here and a point there, and you don't get into too bad a habit of losing games, because that's 3 on the trot now.
Yeah, Waterford down at the foot of the table, James, beaten 2-1 by Finn Harps on their home patch. Mark Burcham's second game in charge. I can't imagine he was under any illusions about the task in hand. The last few days have been a pretty steep learning curve for him, haven't they?
They have indeed. You got the game against Derry on Friday night, but then last night they came out really, really well, got the early goal through Maskell. But they looked really good for, I'd say, about 35 minutes. And then for the last 10 minutes of the first half, Finn Harps just take control and then don't really give it up, create enough chances, and then they get a penalty. I'm first looking at it, I thought it was a penalty, but I've looked at it a couple of times now. I think the defender actually gets a foot to the ball and clears it out, so probably harsh with that. But as soon as that goes in, Adam Foley's just been brought on, and he's going to get a chance and score. So they turned it around. But if I was the manager, or the gaffer, or the geezer, if you look at his interviews, even I think he'd be well impressed with the first 40 maybe 40 minutes of that game and feel there's something there to build on.
Yeah, okay. We'll come on to the First Division in due course. But of course, it's a big week in terms of European football with the two Manchester outfits in action in European finals. Manchester City taking on Chelsea. Are you nervous about that one, Paul?
Don't get me started, Adrian. I'd be so nervous on Saturday. I agreed to doing commentary with yourself and Longford before just to settle the nerves.
Yeah, you'll be dashing back to watch it, I'm sure. Dominic McGuinness is on the line. Dominic, I should point out that Paul, who's also on the line, is a keen Chelsea supporter. Dominic is based in Manchester, so we got United in the Europa League final. We got City in the Champions League final on Saturday evening. How are you doing, Dominic? Are you looking forward to these two big finals?
Yeah, it's great to, obviously, after what's been a very strange season, to end it with two Manchester clubs, obviously, in the finals. And again, it's been a tricky season, particularly for Manchester United, obviously, and for Manchester City, who turned it around from before Christmas when they looked all over the place, and then to finish the way they have. I have every sympathy with Paul feeling nervous, because I think he's got every right to be.
Oh, go on.
Well, I just think Manchester City, this is from a total impartial view. I just think that the way they've finished the season now, and again, I was at the Etihad on Sunday, and I was thinking with the occasion and the trophy lift and the farewell to Aguero, fans in the ground for the first time for the whole season, surely the occasion will get to the City players with the Champions League on the horizon. They'll take their eye off the ball a little bit. Everton still, in theory, can make Europe. They've got something to play for. And then City did what they did. They were ruthless, and the cameo from Aguero just summed it up. So they go into the Champions League now, absolutely on top of the world. And, you know, again, with what's happened recently with Chelsea and Manchester City, and Chelsea winning those last two games, normally you'd have gone in there thinking, well, yeah, Chelsea have got a bit of an Indian sign over City. But I just now think that, you know, again, City just got that momentum, and they've just got the bit between the teeth. There's something about them now with Pep not winning the Champions League outside of Barcelona. Just all seems to be coming together, which is bad news for Chelsea, I think.
Okay, Paul, make the case for Chelsea, please.
Yeah, Adrian, I think I said it to you about 2 months ago that I had a funny feeling that Chelsea were going to win the Champions League. And it was in around the quarterfinal stage.
Yeah, you did.
I don't know what it is, but I just think in once-off games, they're always there or thereabouts. Now, Dominic made a very good point that the form hasn't really been shown over the last number of weeks. And I think if they are to have a real good opportunity, a lot hinges on whether N'Golo Kante and Mendy are going to be fit, because I think if you lose the two of them, you're in real trouble. And Kovacic and Jorginho have shown over the last 2 weeks that they concede possession in difficult areas, or in dangerous areas, and if they do it against Man City, they'll be hurt. But when you look back at Pep's Man City team and teams that have hurt them, it's teams with legs and pace in the final third, and I think Chelsea have that, particularly in Timo Werner, who can be incredibly frustrating. But he can get himself into dangerous positions if he goes with the likes of a Pulisic and a Mount. There's energy that can get in behind Man City. And when they played them in the FA Cup final, or the semi-final, I thought they did that. And if they can replicate that, well, then they'll certainly be in with a fighting chance. The question mark that always lingers over Chelsea is how many chances do they need before they start scoring goals? And they're going to have to certainly be a lot more clinical. But I think they'll be in the game, Adrian. I think the first goal is going to be so crucial. And whoever gets that, if Chelsea can get it in particular, I think they've got a really good chance of kicking on and winning the game from there. But it's going to be a really tight, edgy affair for me.
Yeah. Dominic, on Sunday, Pep was very, very emotional. And obviously there was huge emotion around Sergio Aguero and those two goals and all he's achieved at the club. But Pep, of course, is regarded, rightly so, as one of the great managers of the modern era and indeed perhaps of all time. Great innovator, of course, as well. And obviously holds legendary status, but to really be regarded as one of the genuine greats, given that he's, you know, he's what he's achieved in Spain and in Germany, now with Manchester City having delivered so many Premier League titles, but the big one now has to be surely to get City over the line and win a first ever European Cup.
Yeah, and I don't think they'll have a better chance. And again, as I say, a few weeks ago, I would have given Chelsea a lot more. I would have been a lot more confident about Chelsea really, really testing City. And of course, they still could. I could look silly saying all this, but I just there is something you feel that Manchester City and Pep now, will they ever have a better opportunity? I mean, Pep extended his stay at Manchester City. You know, I think had he won the Champions League in his first couple of years or whatever, I think he's probably gone by now, but he stuck it out. This is absolutely essential for Manchester City to win this European trophy. The Abu Dhabi group came in 2008, and the remit was pretty simple. They've got to become a global force, and they've done it domestically. You know, Pep's won three Premier League titles. You know, they owned the League Cup. They've won an FA Cup. They've done it all domestically. But they haven't won a European trophy. They've won one European trophy in Manchester City's history, and that was in 1970, the Cup Winners' Cup. And now it's just not good enough. There can't be excuses all the time. They've got the squad. They've built a brilliant squad. They've got incredible players. And they have to win the Champions League. You know, Chelsea have won the Champions League. Manchester United won the Champions League. Liverpool have won the Champions League. You know, Tottenham have been in finals. Manchester City haven't. You know, the furthest that they'd gone prior to this season was the semi-final, and that was with Manuel Pellegrini. So there's no excuses for Pep. He's got to win this. And you know, is it, you know, again, do they go again next season if Chelsea pip them this time? It's just really fascinating. But I think the pressure clearly is on Manchester City. I think Chelsea making the top four, you know, even though they didn't play well against Villa, but making the top four, taking a little bit of pressure off Tuchel, because he's coming obviously mid-season and whatever. They've got to an FA Cup final, not done the business. It looked like they were going to drop out of the top four, and then going into this final, that would have been a big problem. As it is, Champions League football is assured. So slightly less pressure, and given everything I'm saying, because I'm bigging up Man City, just because, I've just seen so much of them. They're ingrained in my brain how they can play. And with the talent they have, the attacking talent. But Paul's right about the talent that Chelsea have and the speed and the problems they can pose, as they have done in the last 6 weeks.
James, how do you call us?
I think it's going to be very, very tight. If you look at the both clubs' run-ups to this, you've got Chelsea beating Atletico, Porto, and then Real Madrid to get to this final as far as the knockouts are concerned. And then you've got City, obviously, Mönchengladbach, Dortmund and PSG. So they've both come through very, very difficult ties, but come through them very, very well. Like Man City 4-1 over Paris, 4-2 over Dortmund, 4-0 over Mönchengladbach, and even look at Chelsea, 3-1 over Real, 2-1 over Porto, 3-0 over Atleti. So both of them have come through this by beating the best teams in Europe. And you'd wonder if Tuchel's just the little rub he's had over City over the last couple of months, maybe, might help him. And the fact that he's new into the job, he's been into the cup final before, he's won it, and it'll be interesting to see how he gets on with it. Very, very tight. I hate to say it, Paul, I think the tightness might come down to Man City just nicking it, but hopefully it's a good final and they don't just tip for tat off each other and they go from the start, because we need a final like that, to tell you the truth, in the Champions League.
Yeah, I'm going with City as well. Are you okay there, Paul, now?
Listen, everything points towards City, and even if you look at Pep's records in finals, it's unbelievable. I've had this feeling, Adrian, and maybe it's just the Chelsea fan inside me. I can see Chelsea, and you know what? I can just feel Timo Werner's going to bang in a goal. For all the chances he's missed, there's just something tells me that he's gonna bang one in on the weekend.
Okay, well, we'll send you a text on Saturday night en route from Longford, if that's the case. United, what about United against Villarreal in the Europa League final? City obviously dominating in terms of the Premier League, United finishing second in the table. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he needs this piece of silverware, doesn't he?
Well, he does. There's so many questions about Solskjaer. And obviously, it's been a fairly traumatic end to the season for Manchester United, you know, on and off the pitch with the protests and everything else with the Super League. And then, you know, results, the back-to-back defeats at Old Trafford to Leicester and Liverpool. And it was all, you know, falling apart a little bit. But that was almost inevitable with the congestion and everything else. And Solskjaer pointed to that. Now with injuries, obviously, Harry Maguire is a big problem. He's not going to make it. It looks almost certain he's not going to make it, unless there's a very late twist in the tale. If Solskjaer can end with this trophy, which Mourinho was the first manager for Manchester United to lift this trophy, United never won it before, so they've won it recently, but for Solskjaer to finish second in the Premier League and bring a European trophy home, that's got to spell progress, and it's got to put pressure on the owners after this fraught season to do something about strengthening, because they're miles away from Manchester City. And this has been a unique season with no fans. We've seen crazy results all over the place. It's a hard one to judge, really. But what you can say is that Manchester City are clearly the best team in the Premier League at the moment. I think Liverpool will come on stronger. And obviously, they've proved that they are ahead of Manchester United, or certainly were seen streets ahead last season. So United have to add some real quality to that squad. Too many areas are just not strong enough. I mean, again, highlighted by Harry Maguire being injured. He's had his critics. But the biggest pointer to how important he is when he doesn't play, they look awful at the back. Now, who's going to play at the back? Tuanzebe and Lindelof. Not many United supporters will have a great deal of confidence in them. So they need to strengthen in key areas. And there is some good kids coming through, which is always the way at Manchester United. But progress has been made by Solskjaer. He needs to be backed to go again and to really compete for domestic honours. Because, you know, this is the minor trophy, obviously. They're not in the Champions League final. That's where United should be. They should be looking at that, and they're not. They're a million years away from that at the moment. But they've got a big test against Villarreal. And Unai Emery, of course, knows United very well. He knows this trophy very well. He's won it three times with Seville. Took Arsenal there last year. So, again, he knows exactly what he's doing. So it's by no means a given, this. It's going to be a tough game for United.
Yeah, do United get the votes from you, Paul? What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Listen, I don't think Spanish football is as strong as it has been in previous years, and Villarreal finished seventh within La Liga, so it's hard to look past Manchester United. And like Dom said there, if they're looking to build something and if they're looking to be taken quite seriously, well, then they should be steamrolling the likes of Villarreal. That said, they struggled against Sevilla last year and against the Spanish team and a team that dominates possession. So if Villarreal can kind of stamp their mark on the game, you never know. I think that Harry Maguire, if he is absent, is going to be huge, because I know he has a lot of critics, like Dom said, but he is absolutely vital to that Manchester United team. But when you're playing Villarreal in the Europa League final, they should most certainly be winning that game with the players that they have.
Dominic, it might be an unfair question, and I'm digressing, but you mentioned, you know, clubs strengthening squads. Obviously, there's a lot of speculation about Harry Kane and where his future lies. Do you see it, you know, Kane at either United or City, or is it just so much speculation he could end up anywhere at this point?
Well, I think Daniel Levy, obviously the chief exec of Spurs, will want to sell Kane abroad. I mean, that's the way that he's done it in the past. If you think of Gareth Bale, Luka Modric, you know, when he's had these top players, he doesn't want to sell them to teams that are going to hurt them a couple of times a year in the Premier League. So I think that will be key, whether or not Manchester United can, and Manchester City, who of course have been linked, and they're not alone. I mean, Chelsea have been linked with Harry Kane as well. So can they realistically get a deal together that will prize him away from Spurs, and would they be willing to spend the amount on a fella that's turning 28 in a couple of weeks? It's a tricky one. I mean, Kane's off. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. It's just, will he end up abroad? Will he end up in Spain? Which would, again, be favourite, given the communication lines that you can see between Real Madrid and Spurs in the past and teams like that. I don't know. Manchester United do need to bring in a player like that and make a statement. But they've had tough dealings with Spurs in the past. If you think the Carrick deal wasn't straightforward all those years ago, the Berbatov deal went right down to the wire. There was all sorts of nuances in the contract and everything else. So it, Levy will make it tough for United or City to sign Kane. That's an absolute fact. But of course, we know if the deal is structured right and the money's right, it can happen. But yeah, Kane's off.
Okay, all right. So it's a Manchester double finally, Dominic. Yeah.
Anything? Yeah, I think yes. I'll say yes because I live in Manchester. I've got to say yes. I do think yes. It's not the biggest punt in the world to say United and City double. Nothing would surprise me. Clearly, if Villarreal in a tight game, because they know what they're doing, Emery knows what he's doing, if they were to nick it, it wouldn't surprise me. Likewise, it wouldn't surprise me because it's a one-off. For all I've said about Manchester City and the momentum and everything else, of course it's a cup game, it's a one-off. Chelsea have done it a couple of times in the last 6 weeks. I'd just be surprised because Manchester City just seem to be purring at the right time. So I think City and United, Dominic, it could be tight, but City and United win.
Well said. All right, that's Dominic McGuinness joining us on the line from Manchester. Paul, just a word on a couple of European stories as well. Lille winning the title in France, but Atletico Madrid under Diego Simeone winning La Liga yet again. he's some character. And the Premier League, there's great characters obviously in the Premier League with the likes of Klopp and Pep and whatever, but Simeone would be great in the Premier League. But what an achievement to win another La Liga title with Atleti.
Oh, brilliant. And it ebbed and flowed all season between the top three. And I'm not sure if you saw the game on the weekend. There was some great scenes on the sideline. And Kieran Trippier kicked the ball out off one of the opposition players with about 60 seconds to go. And the emotion and the celebrations from Simeone was superb. So it'd be brilliant to get him in the Premier League. When you see him, the way he gets the crowd behind the team when fans are allowed in is brilliant. And he's one of those characters that you love to watch. But an unbelievable achievement. Any time you beat Real Madrid and Barcelona to a title, it's a difficult thing to do. And the squad that he's put together and getting more life back into Suarez is a serious job, but an incredible achievement. And I was only thinking the other day, Adrian, if you had said that Juventus, Barcelona, or Real Madrid and Paris Saint-Germain wouldn't win the league at the start of the season, you would have laughed. But maybe it's the fact that there's no fans, or maybe there's just a change in tide. But nice to see some fresh faces across the European leagues.
Okay, and well done to Linfield, who won the Irish Cup, beating Larne 2-1 at the weekend. Back to the First Division, Shelburne 3, UCD 1. So Shell's now 5 points clear at the top of the table. UCD in second place. Athlone Town 2, Cove Ramblers 1. Cabinteely overcame Treaty United by 2-1. It finished all square between Cork City and Galway United. John Caulfield back at Turner's Cross. Cork City 1, Galway United 1. Maurice Nugent scoring a late equalising goal after a fine strike from Jack Baxter had given Cork City the lead. And it finished Wexford 0, Bray Wanderers 1. Joe Doyle with the only goal there. In the Women's National League, a check on the results. Bowes 0, Shelburne 1. Emily Whelan with the only goal. Cork City 2, Treaty United 3. A first win of the season for Treaty. Galway 3, Athlone Town 4, a first win of the season for Athlone. And the table toppers, Piemont, 2-0 winners at DLR Waves. Eleanor Ryan Doyle with 2, 1 from the penalty spot. She's absolutely flying it. No surprise there. 8 goals for the season for Eleanor Ryan Doyle. And as I mentioned, Piemont United 7 from 7 on 21 points, 3 points clear of Shelburne, who are on 18 points. Wexford Youths in third on 16 points. The summer break looms, of course, but the last round of matches in the Premier Division take place over the course of the weekend. Finn Harps against Sligo Rovers on Friday evening. Drogheda against Derry City at 7:45. Pats against Dundalk at 7:45. That Harps Sligo Rovers game at Finn Park, by the way, is at 5:45. And then a couple of games on Saturday. Bowes against Waterford. Longford Town against Shamrock Rovers. Both of those games taking place, as I mentioned, on Saturday. And so Paul is heading to Longford Town. Looking forward to covering that one on Saturday Sport. James, just a quick word on the First Division. Shelburne beginning to motor nicely now, aren't they?
Yeah, they're doing really, really well. In fact, that's a 3-1 win. Great win for them over UCD. As you said, they're 5 points clear at the top of the table. I'm mostly impressed, and we spoke to the manager before the season on Athlone Town and how well they've done. Sitting back in third on 16 points. So they're doing really, really, really well. Ian, obviously, we spoke to him last week. Still no points on the board for Wexford. But listen, it's still early days in that division as well. But you'd fancy if Shelburne do get themselves out in front like that, they'll stay in front. But there's, again, like we mentioned this last year, all the way down to Treaty United. From second to Treaty United in seventh are only covered by 3 points. So that's how tight this is going to go down. It'll be like that all the way to the end of the season. Fingers crossed anyway.
All right. OK, lads, listen, we leave it there. Thanks, as always. Thanks to Paul Curry and also to James O'Toole. We're back next week. Until then, from us all, bye for now.